Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. From Wondery.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
That's a tough one, Justin.
Yeah?
I'm a bit ill as we record this, but I think I'm going to make it.
Oh, did you contract the corona?
Well, I've had some symptoms like headaches, body aches, cough, sore throat, and I was tested for the virus, but I apparently do not have the coronavirus.
Huh? Well, that's good. I'm sorry you don't feel good, but yeah. I know a bunch of people that are sick right now, and half of them don't want to go get tested because they don't think it's the coronavirus, and the other half have been tested, and a few of them actually did get it, and they said it wasn't pretty. Everybody else has seemed to recovered after just a few days, so they don't think they had it because, like my mom, she had a bunch of issues, but she didn't have a fever, so she didn't think she had it.
I tried asking the nurse, and I think her answer was essentially, this is just a reminder that even during a pandemic, there are other bugs running around.
Yeah.
So who knows what you have, but, you know, you just need rest and lots of fluids. So that's what I've been trying to do, although now we're recording. But, you know, the show must go on, Justin.
Well, you're a trooper.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tonight's case, we're going to be covering an international story, which makes me happy. This is a story about domestic abuse, mental illness, and ultimately a horrifying murder. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of an 11-year-old boy in Australia by the name of Luke Batty. But before we get to Luke, I think we should talk about his mother, Rosemary Ann Batty. She went by Rosie. She was born in 1962 in Lincolnshire. She's from England. After her mom died in 68, she ended up moving around Europe. I guess you could say she's probably just getting out and seeing the world. But it was in 1987 when she went to Australia on a six-month working holiday visa. Now, while she was in Australia, she met a man. She was in, I guess, a relationship with him for quite a while. It was about 5 years. But that fell apart. It was after that, she got a new job at a recruitment company in Melbourne, and she met a man by the name of Gregory Anderson. Now, Gregory Anderson was a few years older than she was, and they began dating. At her 30th birthday party, she's introducing him as her boyfriend. But while she was in love with him and she thought a lot of him, apparently her friends and other people that she knew, they didn't really like him. He had some sort of a vibe they didn't like.
Yeah, they just didn't gel with him, and his charm would only work on Rosie.
The other problem was, you know, as time went on, she found that he wasn't really able to keep jobs. You can imagine a young woman meets the guy, they move in together, but then she's essentially paying rent. And on top of that, it gets worse because, well, Greg's quite emotional and he becomes abusive towards Rosie.
If he's unable to hold down a job, he becomes unemployed, and then he's violent towards her. If he has a job, well, he has some structure in his life and he's able to make money and feel like he has purpose. So Rosie is kind of giving him a little bit of a pass because she's like, well, as long as he can just get a job, we're going to be okay. But Greg is not holding up his end and keeps getting fired for numerous issues. So after a 2-year relationship, Rosie recognized Greg's emotional and physical abuse and ended up trying to leave him.
Well, I think one of the things she did was she quit the job she had with the recruiting company where she met Greg and went to a different company to work. She was offered a promotion and moved to Sydney in 1995. But a few years later, she was let go. By 2001, she went back to Melbourne. Now, it had been a long time. We're talking about 8 years since she had last seen Greg, but they meet up and their relationship kicks off again.
I mean, I get it. She's moving back to this old city. She didn't have a lot of friends. She didn't have a lot of connections, but Greg is always there.
And this is how domestic abuse goes, right, Justin? I mean, you have your bad times, you have your good times, and if there is a breakup of some kind, well, he can tell her, hey, I'm sorry, it'll be better this time. And Greg's not the same guy because now he's showing interest in Eastern religions and had spent some time at a monastery in New South Wales. He even lived for a time with the Hare Krishna community. So he's trying out different religions, and perhaps the way she sees it is he's trying to find a moral compass. Maybe he will be a better guy this time.
The only thing she doesn't realize is that he got kicked out of that Hare Krishna community for assaulting an old man over some garbage that was left on the lawn. So he's trying to turn over this new leaf, yet everywhere he goes, trouble follows.
And of course, she does realize after a bit that Greg hasn't really changed, that he's still very abusive and he hurts her and says nasty things to her, and she has enough. She wants to kick him out. She's 40 years old at this time, and she finds out she's pregnant.
This pregnancy doesn't go very well either. And it's on June 20th of 2002, where she goes into labor prematurely, and she has to have an emergency cesarean. And she gives birth to their son, Luke. Luke Jeffrey Batty. Now, at the time of Luke's birth, Greg is on retreat in a Russian monastery and couldn't be reached. I don't know if this was planned or if this is just another point in their relationship where Greg is not coming through.
Greg wasn't there, and you know, she wanted to leave him anyway. He had been out of the country, but Rosie's dad and stepmom came to visit, and they start working with her so they can get maybe things in motion so she and her son can go back to England. But she was told that because Greg is the father, he might have a say in whether she can move out of the country or not.
This really sucks for Rosie because she's already had issues with Greg in the past. She has called the police on him. There's been violence, but not a lot of documentation, not a huge paper trail. So they're saying you can't leave the country with your child. Otherwise, that's considered kidnapping. So regardless of her troubled relationship with Greg, she feels like she's stuck.
I think there's also something here where it's causing her to consider Luke in the, you know, in the world, not just as her child, but as Greg's child. So she can't just up and leave, right? But while she doesn't perhaps love Greg anymore because he's too abusive, he has shown some love toward his son. Of course, we're going to talk about it, but it seemed as though Greg did love Luke. This is important because, you know, ideally you'd say if someone's abusive, you wouldn't want your kid around them. You wouldn't want to be around them. I don't know. It's just, it's a tricky situation. It's more complicated than we would perhaps like it to be.
Well, we can all sit back and armchair quarterback everyone else's relationships and how we would have done things. But she does see Greg treat her son well, and she wants her son to have a father figure. So she's trying to hold on to that.
While she can't move to England, she can visit England with Luke. And over the next 10, 11 years, she and Luke go there 7 times over that time span.
Now, during this time, Luke discovers a love for sports like football and cricket. He's a very active child. Of course, Rosie's loving this because he's not having difficulty with learning. He's embracing school. And at a very young age, he also joined the Scouts in Australia. That helped him find good male role models while he was growing up. And as much as Greg and Rosie were having a terrible time getting along, she did see that Greg was very devoted to Luke, Luke's schooling, and their relationship with each other. He would take Luke out to museums and parks and shows. He even taught him how to sail. He helped him with his math homework. And he gave him gifts whenever Greg was able to afford to give him gifts. And it's between 2006 and 2013 where Greg's contact with Luke begins to become limited because of the family courts, and they start restricting some of the visitations. Obviously, when Greg is not able to see his son as much as he would like to, he would become more and more aggressive. He already has a history of making threats. And at one point, he threatened to cut off Rosie's foot. And on another occasion, told Luke's football coach that he had a knife with your name written on it. So, not the nicest guy.
We already talked about how others had issues with Greg. And in late 2010, Greg ended up breaking his wrist and went into the hospital. Because of how he was acting there, the hospital decided to carry out a mental health assessment. We don't know what kind of diagnosis could have been made because we don't see any results like that. But the psychologist said that Greg likely had subclinical bipolar and mild hypermania. So again, this isn't anything where they feel like he's a major risk, but they did put him on a regular dose of diazepam. I guess that's Valium. And I guess this would be so that they can get him to calm down. And if you think about what kind of a rage he goes into for a hospital to run an assessment on him, just imagine living with this guy.
And that's what diazepam does, is it's the Johnny on the spot for either anxiety, anger, or whatever aggression you might be feeling. This is an email he had written essentially to Luke, knowing that Rosie was going to read it. "I'm disappointed in you, Luke. You have become too feminine. Your spirit, Luke, has a dark hood on your head, and Abel has its glue in your mother's life." So he's telling a 3 or 4 year old boy that he's becoming too feminine and that he has a dark hood over his head. It shows some of the early stages of Greg's delusions and distortions of reality. A lot of Rosie's friends and family wanted her to move back to England, but Luke didn't want to leave his friends. He didn't want to leave his school. So he didn't want to go back to England. And what's a mother supposed to do when your child's saying, "I'm happy where I am. I don't want to change schools. I don't want to give up all my friendships." So again, Rosie's sticking around and she's having to put up with Greg to give him visitation rights to see Luke. And during these visitations, of course, altercations will break out, arguments will happen, and Luke is witness to all of this.
He was placed in therapy for it. It was art therapy. I think the reason was because he was having night terrors. Now, we have to be clear here. Up to this point, Luke had never been attacked by his father, and he would say that he loved his dad. The courts are involved. Greg's being monitored. He can't just have Luke. His visitations are monitored. Really, all you can say here is that Rosie is trying to keep everything right. You know, she's trying to keep things right for her son, and she's trying to go right by the courts, and she's trying to make sure that Greg has a chance to visit with his son. That's a lot to do for someone who obviously had very troubled times with Greg, to put it mildly. I mean, she was abused by him.
Absolutely. And this continues on until January 4th of 2013, where Greg is arrested for violating one of the family violence intervention orders, which in the States is just called a restraining order. The reason being is Greg had arrived at Rosie's house the previous afternoon and was screaming that he was going to kill Rosie in front of her child. That's interesting. He's threatening to kill her in front of the kid. And when the officers arrested him, he told the officers, "I only answer to Jesus. I want to know why you think you have the right to hold me at all." And I don't think Greg really was following any of his religious beliefs at this point. I think narcissism would be his problem. What gives you the right to control me when I'm trying to control somebody else's life? But that's just me analyzing the situation.
I don't think you're wrong. He had shown a lot of interest in religions. He was reading about them. He was staying at monasteries and things. But really, Greg obviously has some issues. They're rage related and probably related to narcissism. He really does only answer to God. April 2013, Luke and his dad were spending time together. This was during one of their scheduled visits, and they were in Greg's car. This is a terrifying moment because up to this point, like we said, Greg had never threatened Luke. But while he's in the car with his son, he pulled out a knife. He said, "We could go to a better world together, and this could be the one to end it all." Now, I don't know how Luke can digest that, but the good news is he told his mom after he got home, and then she directly reported that to a child protection practitioner. These are people that are employed by the Victorian Department of Human Services. Her name was Tracy Pertelli.
She's got to assess how much of a threat this truly is and see if they need to intervene. Yeah.
This is going by the book here. You know, when this happens, you do this. If that happens, you do this. Luke is questioned, during an interview, and he tells the child protection practitioner and a detective in September that his dad started praying out loud, and he really believed that his dad was going to carry out this attack to kill them both so they could go to a better place. He said that it's also possible that because he'd been watching more horror movies at the time, that he may have just scared himself into thinking his dad was actually going to hurt him when he wasn't.
This is what a child does, is they don't want to get their parent in trouble. So they'll tell the truth, but then once they see that they've tattletaled on a parent who is going to suffer ramifications, and they're going to start to backpedal a little. And I think that's what Luke's doing right here, because he doesn't want his father to get in any more trouble. He feels bad for his dad.
And that could be because he started talking about how when his dad said he could end it all, he thought maybe that his dad was just threatening himself because he'd never threatened Luke before. Again, this is some kind of a situation that Luke really can't break down. I'm not sure if anybody can break this down. All we know is he threatened his son, Greg did, and now it's been reported and the authorities know about it, but what can they do? So during this interview, Luke's mom, Rosie, said that he had previously told her that Greg had threatened to hurt both of them, but then Luke said, "No, I didn't do that. I didn't say that." So what are the authorities supposed to do? Luke is the one who is possibly in danger here, and Luke is saying the story is not true. So where can they go with that, Justin?
This is the problem. And I've talked to people here in the States about child protective services and how you have to take threats seriously. But at the same time, if the family turns around and says, "Well, maybe nothing happened and we should just move on," you have to have the family's backing. You have to have the child's backing in a lot of cases. But here we have this situation where I think they absolutely should have stepped in. We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you,
honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
They closed the case in October, Justin, based on Luke's testimony, although word had it that he had never even seen a horror film. And the child protection officer or child protection practitioner knew about Greg's previous threats. We can talk about when there's domestic violence, there are troubles in a relationship, the police are called. There's always he said, she said, and then she said, he said later. But when you have a history of this, and even a hospital has run an assessment on someone because of their anger issues, then how much do you need, right? I mean, do we attempt to head anything off at the pass, or do we just let it roll and wait to see if something happens?
This is where, again, if I'm armchair quarterbacking, I'm saying cut visitation rights off from this guy. Take this child away from him because he is a danger. But I'm not in the situation and I'm not in charge.
A court did decide that Greg couldn't have contact with Luke anymore. But of course, Greg decided to challenge that. And later, a decision was made that, and this is with Rosie agreeing, that he could have limited contact with his son at public sporting events. So this meant, you know, if Luke's playing cricket or football, whether practice or games, then he can go. And he started showing up. And it almost sounds like he was showing up more often because this was his only avenue to see his son.
Yeah. And this is what typically happens with family courts and mediation is you have to come to some sort of compromise. And Rosie's thinking he's never shown any aggression towards Luke except for verbal threats. And if the family courts think that, you know, limited visitation in public at public events is okay, she's kind of going along with it, but she doesn't like it. According to some of the things I've read, she's just going along with it.
Right. But she is monitoring everything. And when Greg started showing up to her son's scouting meetings, that's something that she wanted to do something about. And she did. She contacted the authorities and said, hey, he's violating the FVIO. But the police said, you know, the way that this order is written, it's a little vague. And we're not sure that it would bar him from the scouting meetings.
So she goes to the courts and says, we need to clarify this order. We need this to shut down Greg just showing up anytime he wants to anything that Luke is doing. So I think that in September of 2013, that's when the court systems just allowed public contact, meaning the cricket games or sporting events. But Rosie wasn't notified of a lot of these changes. And Rosie wasn't notified about a lot of other charges pending against Greg, other things he had done, nor were these other charges pending against Greg ever taken into account in this family court system.
This is probably something that was made easier on Greg because Greg didn't have a job, didn't have a home, and so he was a little more difficult to track, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he's living out of his car for the most part because he doesn't have a job. Once his car breaks down, he's in and out of halfway houses. He's essentially homeless. So how do you track this man down and arrest him for warrants? How do you bring him in when nobody knows where he is? They'll call Rosie and say, hey, Rosie, do you know where Greg is? Because we need to arrest him. And she's saying, I don't know where he is. He just shows up and threatens me. And then I call you guys. So it's just this long, drawn-out process. And the police, they don't have any centralized record keeping. So he can have a warrant in one area, one county, one province, and that doesn't translate to another. So the police, they don't know. They don't have the complete picture of how terrifying Greg is.
Let's talk about how terrifying he is. In February of 2014, he had four warrants out for his arrest. There were a total of 11 criminal charges, and seven of those were related to family violence. Now, the one that really stood out to me, because at this point we haven't talked about it, and I think it also might explain the danger of this man, is that he was being charged with possession of child sex abuse images of young girls, ages 10 to 14. So why would you want him alone with any child?
He has a charge for child pornography that they found, yet he's not arrested, and the family court systems are still allowing some visitation rights, limited, but some. And Rosie only finds out about these charges well after the fact. She could have used all of this in her favor, or she would have made a lot of different choices when she was negotiating with the mediation team about Greg's visitation. But she didn't have all the information, and the system did not provide it to her. And this is the problem with victims' rights, is a lot of the times you're not told, oh, that guy that beat the crap out of you is out of jail now. They have no duty to inform you. They have no duty to inform you that he has all these other pending charges. So Rosie is doing what she thinks is right, but has been lied to through omission about this man by the system.
And at the very heart of this, despite what she'd been through, she really did try to give Greg access to his son. Now, granted, it was limited. Luke had to be within her sight, but still, she really did try to be as fair as possible given what Greg had been doing for all those years and despite all the threats he'd made. Rosie, she's a very caring and thoughtful person. Just in February 12, 2014, Luke arrived with his mom at the Bungayan Reserve Football and Cricket Grounds. He was going to have a practice at 5 p.m. They had arrived at 4:40, and, well, Luke saw Greg. And Rosie asked if Luke wanted to have her stay, but he said, I haven't seen my dad for a while, and so she left. Now, this is a public practice. There are a lot of people there, and so she thought, it'll be okay, right?
The coach is there. Other kids are there. If something goes awry, there's witnesses. There's people to engage. So Greg is usually there to help Luke practice. Greg is usually there to be involved with his son. He is usually, as I put that in air quotes, trying to be a good dad to his son.
Rosie got back to Bungayan Reserve just before 6 o'clock, and sure enough, she looked and found Greg and Luke practicing together. Greg was bowling the balls to Luke, who was hitting them with his cricket bat.
Yeah, they were practicing in the cricket nets. I guess this would be the equivalent of a batting cage off to the side. It was not on the field. You know, the nets are there to catch the ball so you can keep rolling them and practicing. But at the same time, it is away from the larger group of people.
Of course, other people are there packing up and stuff. And Luke ran over to his mom and said, can I have a few more minutes with my dad? And she said, sure. Just before 6:30, and this is where pretty much everyone's getting ready to leave. I mean, they're already heading out. And the coach's kid, who is 8 years old, forgot his bag near the nets. So we went back to get it. And he was the one who witnessed Greg bringing a cricket bat down over Luke's head. And after he hit him, then Greg grabbed a knife that he brought with him and stabbed Luke several times in the neck.
Now, some of the children had witnessed this also, but they were so panicked by it that they weren't able to tell others exactly what had happened. So there's panic spreading through the crowd, but most people could not fathom or comprehend what had just happened. They thought that Luke had suffered from an accident in these cricket nets.
His mom, Rosie, when she heard a scream, she looked over and she saw her son on the ground and Greg was kneeling over him. And apparently she did see blood, but she didn't even think that this was an attack. She thought it was an accident. So she ran off in the direction of the clubhouse so she could call an ambulance. But the coach, who was told by his son what had happened, went immediately to the area and asked Greg, "Is Luke okay?" And Greg got up from the ground and he ran at him with the knife. And so this is a very tense situation. The coach can see that Luke is down on the ground. He's bloody. He's not moving. And now Luke's father is attacking him with a knife, meaning the coach. After a second charge, he says, "Yeah, he's okay. He's okay now. He's gone to heaven."
So the coach went over there, asked him what was up, and Greg charged him with a knife. That's, yeah. If there was any question about the intent here, this answers that. But emergency services are dispatched because the initial call was an accident, not a father or an adult killing a child.
They learn real fast because they're getting out and Greg is holding a knife where they can see it. And he's yelling at them that it's too late. They should just go get the police.
So police are called and they get there pretty quick. By 6:50, two police officers or constables are moving towards Greg. And they see that he's now moved out from the nets and is holding a knife covered in blood. So the constables pull their guns out, because that's what you do when somebody is threatening you with a knife. And they tell him to drop the knife. They're trying to negotiate with him. They even form up a line, trying their best to take control of the situation. They attempt to disarm Greg by spraying him with pepper spray or mace. But I'll tell you right now, I've been sprayed with mace and pepper spray. It sucks. You can't see, but if you are 100% dedicated to attacking something in front of you, pepper spray doesn't do anything. It will not stop you. So at this time, Greg lunges at the police officers. The lead constable discharged his weapon, hitting Greg, who fell to the ground. Paramedics were able to get to Luke, but he was pronounced dead at the scene. The officers held Greg down because he was still moving. They attempted to give him medical attention because the bullet was lodged in his chest. They also found that Greg had likely self-inflicted wounds from his knife. So he has multiple wounds from his knife and a gunshot. So he's airlifted to the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, but is pronounced dead at 1:25 a.m. in the morning.
So just imagine how Rosie feels. She's lost her son. Her ex, who murdered her son, is now dead. Her world must just be devastated. And I don't know how she did it, but she made a statement on Friday. Now, before I get to that, though, on Thursday, there was a candlelit vigil held for Luke Batty, and so many students and staff members that knew him were very much affected by the news of what happened. This vigil was a way for them to honor their friend, Luke Batty. Now, on Friday, Rosie spoke to the media. This is what she had to say. "If there is a silver lining to be found in the tragedy, it will be increased awareness about the issue of family violence. I want to tell people that family violence happens to anybody, no matter how nice your house is, no matter how intelligent you are. When you're involved with family violence, friends, family judge you, the woman, the decisions you should make, the decisions you don't make. You're the victim, but you become the person that people condemn. The people here reading this will say, why didn't she protect him? Why didn't she make certain decisions? But when you actually finally decide enough is enough and decide to go through a court process, you do not know what the outcome will be. What I want people to take from this is that it isn't simple. People judge you. People tell you what you should do. You do the best you can. Just reading that, it's heartbreaking because people do forget. They forget that Rosie is a victim in this.
Yeah.
And people will say, an 11-year-old died. Who do we blame? Well, isn't it obvious who we blame? We blame Greg. You know, Rosie, every step of the way, she contacted the police. She contacted family. She made arrangements. She did her due diligence with the courts and made sure that the visitations were limited, that the courts and the authorities were always involved, that they knew what was going on. She did the best she could, but still there are people who blame her for the murder of her son, which is disgusting.
This reminds me of a certain documentary that we both watched.
I think you're referring to Dear Zachary.
Yeah, where every step of the way, they're trying to protect a child. But the system, it seems that there's a lot of red tape. People's hands get tied. People want to do the right thing. People want to armchair quarterback here and say that Rosie's at fault. I get it. I understand where they're coming from. I know in my family, I'm taking care of a child who I don't want anything to do with her mother. But there's other family members that think I'm the jerk because I don't want the abusive parent around the child. And they think, well, how could you take a child away from the parent? I'm thinking, because something bad might happen. But it's not so simple. It's not so black and white.
I just think there's a real ignorance here. Or failure to walk in someone else's shoes, because I guarantee you that Rosie's life was destroyed here at this moment. If people could just feel what she felt, they wouldn't have opened their mouths. But maybe I'm just assuming that people would have a heart in this situation. We said that she, you know, meaning Rosie, she wasn't aware of all the charges. She wasn't even aware of all of the decisions the courts had made in terms of his visitation rights with his son. We do know that he did violate the FVIO by being at the cricket practice because it was a practice. By law, he was not supposed to be at a weekday practice session. So he was in violation of that. But what does that really mean in the end?
Yeah, he was only supposed to be at games on the weekend.
He could have done this on the weekend, right?
Yeah, I mean, what would it have mattered?
She could have said, he's not supposed to be here. And yes, the police could have come and taken Greg away. But on the weekend, he would have been back, right? It's not like he would have been gone for a long time. With what he did to his son, that's something that he could have come back and done, whether it was in 2 days or 2 weeks. He was bound and determined to do this. And when we get to the why of it, it seems like on one hand, you might say he's doing this to get to Rosie, right? He really wants her to pay because he'd already abused her and treated her like garbage for a long time. This is his way of getting back at her. But maybe it's more than that. I don't think he really wanted Luke to live anymore because he was already losing him. And it's one of those things where if I can't have him, no one can. That's the way I saw this. And I'm not saying I'm necessarily right, but that's just what my instincts told me when I was reading about this story. How did you feel, Justin?
I agree. He was on a downward spiral. His life was crumbling. I truly think that he had unaddressed mental health problems, but he was also a narcissistic control freak. And when you take that control away, when you file a restraining order against a crazy stalker, abuser such as Greg, as much as I think everyone should file those orders against somebody, it can escalate things. It can make things worse sometimes. They see this as a loss of control, and now the narcissist has to come back and get their revenge. They have to come back and show you that you can't control them. I mean, he even said it to the police, said it in a religious way, but that's a typical control freak. That's a typical narcissist. It's sad that Rosie wasn't playing with a full deck of cards. She didn't have all the information she needed to make better decisions.
I don't find any fault with Rosie personally. I think she did everything that she thought she was supposed to do in the best interests of Luke first, and it just didn't work out. And yeah, it would have been nice if the courts had informed her of the decisions rather than just make the decision and move on. Because we know if you are not enforcing decisions, they don't mean anything. Just like it didn't mean anything here. Oh yeah, the court made a decision. Guess what? It had zero impact on this case. Luke Batty still died. And there's no one to hold accountable. Now, what they can do, and this is something Rosie talked about, was maybe even though she suffered and her family suffered this great loss, maybe something good will come out of it because it will bring attention to domestic violence, to family violence. And sure enough, in late October and December of 2014, there was a coronial inquest. So what they were trying to figure out was, how did this happen? Is there anything we could have done differently to help prevent it? And hopefully, this is something that will bring about change. And so as part of this, Rosie had to give evidence over the course of 2 to 3 days. No one else gave such evidence, said that Greg's parents were too old. They couldn't testify. They were too frail. She was really kind of put through the ringer with this, but to her, this was very much worth the time. That doesn't mean that it wasn't difficult on her. I mean, at one point, she had yelled, "Why am I having to defend the decisions I made about our son?" Remember, this wasn't just her operating in a vacuum. She had to go through the courts. She had to contact authorities. Everything had to be done by the book. If she was left to her own devices, we can tell by the decisions she made early on, she might have just left for England with Luke. But she wasn't allowed to. Not because she wasn't allowed to by law, but because she was advised that if she did, she might be in trouble. Greg might be able to do something about that. They would consider that kidnapping, possibly. So rather than go through the courts and figure all that out, and because also Luke was saying, "I want to stay here," she had to make decisions. She really did consider Luke first.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
The other trouble here is you can say, what can we do differently? Part of this process was they interviewed people that were involved and they asked, did you ever at any point think that Greg would ever hurt his son? And everybody said, he was abusive, he was this or that, but not toward his son. What are they expected to do? I mean, how do you fix that? Other than you need better communication, you need to give more power to people who, like Rosie, are in a very tough situation, and there is evidence that she's dealing with violence from this man. Once you start doing things like what Greg was doing, you should start losing your rights. And that's to save a child. If you're threatening violence or death on people and you're physically hurting people, you have rage issues like Greg, and he never even sought help for these things, then yes, we need to consider Luke first, just like Rosie was trying to, and not worry so much about Greg, because we saw what Greg did when he had his chance. He used it to kill.
I have so many issues with Child Protective Services guidelines, not with the people that are trying to do their job and trying to protect children, but with policies and guidelines that they have to adhere to. And it seems that as long as the child has a roof over their head, that person's good. You can talk about abuse. You can talk about a lot of violence in the home. And it seems that that falls on deaf ears. Report after report of violence, report after report of the water and utilities being turned off, the child being removed from school and dragged around a casino or a bar. None of that mattered. So it's one of those things where I think that there's a lot of improvement to be had. And given I'm speaking of a very particular department here in the States, but as you can see, the trends are universal when it comes to protecting a child.
A constable also testified. He had said that he had attempted to arrest Greg a number of times, but he could never find him. And again, you know, Greg's living out of a car. The last few weeks before the murder, he was staying at, I guess, kind of like a boarding home. He was just really hard to locate. Now, there was additional testimony by Professor Paul Mullen. And what he did was a psychiatric autopsy. And his conclusion was that Greg likely had a delusional disorder. It's described as a form of psychosis, but where persons can present as normal. I think that is something that we've encountered before, you know, when covering cases. And it's quite scary because you would think someone can reach out, they can tell somebody, something can be done, but no, you can't. I mean, it's so much of life seems out of our control. It doesn't matter what you know, what you can say, you're always going to be dependent on a system or other people, and they may not have the same urgency. They may not see things the way you see them. Even if Rosie had felt her son was in danger, what would be the difference?
There's so many what ifs. She could have taken her son back to England and then dealt with a whole legal process. She could have cut off all visitation to Greg, who then could have leveraged the courts against her. She could have called the police at the practice, which in hindsight would have saved her son's life. But when you're in the moment, calling the police and having your kid's dad arrested in front of everybody is pretty traumatic and embarrassing. We can what if all day long, but Rosie was trying her best.
And I still don't believe, even if she had called the police that day, even if she had known that Greg wasn't allowed at the practice, that would have just put this day off. Because what he did to his son, Luke, that was something he had planned. You can just tell. So this would have happened, whether it was that day or a week later or a month later, he would have attacked and killed his son. That was the plan. And I'm not sure how anyone could have prevented it unless, like we talked about early on, back in 2002, if she had been allowed to move back to England with him. Since the murder of Luke Batty, there have been other deaths related to family violence, and there have been calls for change to help people and their children. In 2016, the Victorian Royal Commission into Family Violence delivered a 7-volume report to Government House. This included 227 recommendations for change to the current system, and those are available online. But I think the final question, the final thing I want to talk about here is that Rosie Batty was often asked, do you regret this? Do you regret that? The main question, though, has always been, do you regret allowing Greg at all any contact with Luke? And her answer is one, I think, out of love. Rosie said that she wanted to ensure that Luke knew that both his parents loved him. You know, on one hand, you're going to have people questioning Rosie's decisions and her thought processes. But again, I think Rosie always did her best for her son. And just because this awful human being, Greg Anderson, took his son's life doesn't reflect poorly on Rosie. It reflects poorly on Greg.
In 2015, Rosie Batty was named Australian of the Year. The following year, she was put on a list for the world's greatest leaders. And then in 2015 and 2016, she was named one of the most influential people in the world. And this all stems from the creation of her Luke Batty Foundation and her work towards reforming laws about domestic violence and abuse.
We can say what should be done, but there's such a resistance to altering the status quo that it's just upsetting.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.